as part of the Author Guild's Wit Festival happening in the Berkshires on Saturday, September 28th at 3:30. Kathy Park Hong and Syed Kishoa will have a conversation on the tensions and beauties inherent in overlapping identities and how they grapple with the inadequacies of language, confronting the distance between what has happened and how it has happened. Hong's deeply felt book of essays, Minor Feelings, about the experience of being Asian American, earned her a place on the cover of Time magazine. Kishoa, an Arab-Israeli novelist and newspaper columnist based in Boston, is best known internationally as the creator of the hit TV series, most recently Madrasa, about a bilingual school in Jerusalem where Palestinians and Israelis try to find a common ground. Syed Kishoa, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's really nice to have you on the program. Give us a sense of, in a conversation like this, of what you're looking forward to and some of the ideas that you'll be discussing and exploring.
That's why I like moderators, you know. Sometimes I'm not prepared. But based on my long experience of readings and giving talks, probably such a conversation cannot ignore the tragic reality of Palestine, Israel, about what's happening in Gaza following the October 7 attack. So usually I always worked and I always thought that my mission is somehow to recover hope somehow in my writing, to find some kind of hope, to create a possible imaginary even for a better future in which Palestinians and Israelis can live equally together. So honestly, I'm not sure about the meeting. I mean, unless a miracle happens and there's a ceasefire and we can talk again about the importance of complex identities, of multiculturalism, of multilingualism. So it is going to be a very challenging conversation, I guess. I hope that I can still discuss. There's a wonderful book called Hope Without Optimism, and I was happy to read it to understand that that hope is, for me at least, more an ethical human stance rather than a possibility.
As it is unfolding and as we follow what is happening and the tragedies that occur, is it difficult to talk about? Is it something that you really have to think about prior, or is it a subject that is something where it's almost therapeutic to have a discussion about?
For many months, I think, I wrote some columns that I wanted to publish at the beginning or even later. I just couldn't publish anything. I didn't want to say anything. At times I thought that silence is the proper reaction right now. There, I couldn't find any words in order really to express my pain, which is, I'm in Boston. I do not live not in Palestine. I don't live in Gaza. So with all due respect to my pain and my suffering, how can I even dare talk about pain in such horrible days? So it is a little bit, sometimes I feel, hopeless, I guess, more than anything else. But I did, honestly, when I was offered from the wonderful chairs of the Jewish Studies and the Middle Eastern Studies at Dartmouth College, I was offered to teach, based on my writings, to teach a summer class, on the politics of Israel-Palestine. I was offered that probably before the new year, so sometime in November, December. I never imagined that I'm going to teach a class starting in June, ending in August, while the war is still going on. And I was terrified, to talk about it, to discuss it in a class with wonderful 33 students. Absolutely, I was terrified. What is possible and what is not possible to say? How the class is going to look like? And I have to say that experience was just amazing for me. There were some there, of course, what we considered, yes, the pro-Palestinian, let's call it, or pro, and many also what we can call it pro-Israelis. And it was, you know, again, as I'm disconnecting that from the realities, from the horrific realities, yes. But at least here, yes, there was a dimension of being able to talk about it and actually to be satisfied to see how students, wonderful students, debate, like heated debates, but yet have a lot of respect, willing to understand, to listen. So in many ways, probably, you know, again, but again, I feel so stupid talking about my pain when I just follow the daily news. I'm doing my best, you know, to adopt escapism as much as possible. I feel just ridiculous to talk about my pain.
You talk about being terrified and doing the course and with students. Did the students seem at all ambivalent of sharing their thoughts in a cautious sense, or were they very open?
I believe they were very open, very respectful, yet very open. Smart kids that raised very difficult questions. We had politicians joining us via Zoom to discuss the most difficult questions. And it has never been an easy topic to teach, especially not during this horrific reality. Yes. I believe that within a couple of classes, some kind of a safe environment was created in class. Probably looking at a Palestinian citizen of Israel writing in Hebrew, probably that contributed to this some kind of, I hope, safe environment for the students. You know, I'm struggling myself in order to find a way that people can just live just equally together without masters and slaves, without occupiers and occupied. And you know, though I don't have many thoughts about it, it's just you know, but that has been always my dream. As you probably know, that dream was shattered in 2014 when I left my writing, my career, my house in Jerusalem to very much the unknown, me and my wife and my kids, because it was too much for us. It looked like all our hopes, you know, sending exactly our kids to the bilingual school in Jerusalem and believing in one day people would live equally together and some kind, whatever that means, justice will prevail. So it was, yeah, in the summer again, during another war on Gaza, when only 2,500 Palestinians, most of them women and children, were killed, that I lost hope, political hope. It is very painful. All my life I lived among Palestinians and Israelis. I write in Hebrew and in Arabic. I know wonderful, wonderful people, Palestinians and Israelis, and it's only makes it much more frustrating to see politicians and leaders leading us to such a horrific reality.
Given that reality, I am curious as if by seeing the and hearing the openness of the students, do you wonder of why it is so difficult to have more open conversations that could ultimately be productive and yield the hope that you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation?
Do you mean here within campuses and American?
Well, yes, and extrapolated around the world, sure.
Well, sadly, if we talk about Palestine, Israel, the most frustrating thing is to see how extremism and extremists are conducting the discourse. That's the frustrating thing, is to see how people who are ready to talk are silenced, are accused of being traitors. And honestly, when we look at the what used to be the peace camp in the Israeli society, sadly it is shrinking. But yes, they might be accused of being collaborators, traitors, self-hating Jews on the same side. you know, when we look at the Palestinian, I truly believe that the majority of the Palestinians living in West Bank and Gaza wanted to achieve some kind of agreement, and then you see that the moderates are achieving nothing. That peaceful protest and peaceful negotiations lead to nothing. When you think about it, that's almost no talks initiated, of course, especially because of the government, is the very right-wing government in Israel, did not even want to talk with the whole world, considered the Palestinian Authority or the PLO, used to be Fatah, as the more moderate, as the people who are seeking to achieve some kind of an agreement, a peace deal with the Israelis. Again, it's generally speaking. But you see that you achieve nothing, and that settlements are just growing, and the dreams of establishing a Palestinian independent state, you know, anyone who lives there, it was happening in front of his eyes, just increasing and populating the West Bank with the Jewish settlers. So sadly, all these voices from both sides see the reality, and then the Israelis see the terror attacks, of course, and, you know, probably the extremist right wing were right, that it is only about violence and only the language of violence that they will understand. The same thing, of course, for the Palestinians. We see that settlements are growing. We see that no one is negotiating. We see that the dream is almost impossible. Everyone now agrees that it's an illusion even to talk about two states, a solution or ending the occupation. So probably the extremists are right. And that's the frustrating thing done by leaders and politicians, is to eliminate voices, which I believe the majority of human beings just want to live in peace and raise their kids and, you know, just have normal lives. And that's probably the most frustrating thing, you know, for someone. Usually I'm accused of building bridges between cultures. I usually say, well, I'm trying more to dig tunnels between cultures rather than bridges, and they are all collapsed. So, you know, it's also, for me, it's a very devastating feeling. You know, this I run away, and it's not a pleasant feeling to give up, to run away. It's admitting that I lost my small private personal battle. Yeah.
When you feel that hopelessness, and does your art help? Does writing help? Does the creative writing in not only an understanding of what you're thinking, but to clear your mind to allow some degree of hope to come creeping into that?
Probably not as much as two shots of bourbon can help, but
well, I don't know what could beat that. Sure,
you know, I mean, usually, you know, the art is art, and art for the sake of art. I never, to be honest, my writing, I always there was a political agenda behind it, a social political agenda behind my writing, I guess, especially when I write for TV or for newspaper.
Right.
Maybe less writing short stories, maybe less writing novels. Yet you can find in some kind of ideas or ideologies in my writing. If it's helped on a personal level, to be honest, in such a situation, I feel very much paralyzed, and I'm not successful in finishing jobs and TV shows. Actually, one of them I already sold for the Israeli public channel. And also a second season of Madrasa about the bilingual school was ordered, but for now, actually, I cannot see how I can bring back. It's a bigger challenge to bring back these teenagers to their high school classes to discuss and to find a common ground on a language, yes, when the war is going on. So I hope I will still can do it. It took me, when I moved to the United States, probably 8 to 9 years to gain back this confidence and to address this time. I chose, actually, with the last project for TV, was to address teenagers and kids. That's the reason that I chose to write Madrasa and literally, like, it's Arabic and Hebrew and mixed identities. And among, in the midst of very tense, you know, and Jerusalem was always politically very tense. So, yes, just to imagine, just to give this, you know, slight feeling of hope, to offer a different imagination of the future. So, yes, that was very comforting, of course. But you know, so it premiered Madrasa in January 2023. I was so happy with the results and the way that it was received by the viewers, both Arabs and Israeli viewers. But then the war, and then again you feel ridiculous, and you know. So now I have to, I think, to find, if I can, a different way, maybe, you know, to recover a little bit in order to be able to go back to writing. Yes.
And you use the word recover. I mean, there is do you have a sense of what it will take to help you recover?
Stop the killing would be a huge step forward.
Sure.
Yes. Honestly, this is like, I know, again, it's you know, it's I talked a lot about hope because I have no idea, and that's why I said I like this idea of hope without optimism. I have no idea why I still carry in me that hope. I don't see any rational reason for me to have that kind of hope. Maybe just the trust in the kindness or universal values, or maybe just because of, I know I work and they have wonderful friends. I mean, Israeli friends, that I still have that hope. Truly, it's hope without any kind of optimism. So I still, every morning, you know, I'm just like a little, I don't know, just waiting for this Christmas gift or something like that, that they open the news hoping that, I don't know, the White House imposed a ceasefire, they started the negotiation. I remember how happy and relieved I was when there was some kind of deal regarding the hostages and to stop the war. But it was for a couple of days, sadly. So I don't know. It is. I think that hope is. It is a some kind of human instinct. Even in the darkest places, you still have that hope, probably as a mechanism for life. So first of all, you know, some kind of a ceasefire and stop the killing and return the hostages, and God knows if political recovery is even possible. You know, I don't know how, because now Gaza is not a place that people can live in. It's not livable at all. Nothing, no infrastructure, no hospitals, no schools. So I don't know, but the least is to stop the war and ceasefire, and then try to find ways, and you know, in order to get back somehow to life.
Syed Kashua is going to be part of the WIT Festival, put on by the Authors Guild, and happening September 27th through the 29th at Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts. The WIT Literary Festival, part of the Authors Guild Foundation, with their theme this year, The Power of Words, Why Writers Matter. The event that Syed will be taking part in is on Saturday afternoon at 3:30. You can find more information about the entire festival by going to authorsguild.org, authorsguild.org. Syed Kashua, thank you so much for sharing with us, and best of luck to you. And we look forward to hearing from both of you on Saturday.
Thank
you very much. Be well. Again, Syed Kashua speaking as part of the WIT Literary Festival on Saturday, September 28th at 3:30. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.